Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio listeners. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's only up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of September 2018. Everyone's going back to school. Well, you know, you got your book bag on your back. Maybe you got your college books underneath your arm. Maybe you're feeling a little bummed out that the summer's over, but you know what? You should cheer up. You want to know why? Because you're wonderful. You're a masterpiece. You're beautifully made. You're important to people because you're important to me. You're highly favored by your creator, whether that's a god or by the law of averages and physics working in tandem. You, my friend, are thirsty for knowledge, addicted to wonder. That's why you're going to school again. Ha! You, my friend, are an oddball. And here on this show, you are family and we are one. Guys, this is episode 58 of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, your monthly paranormal variety show. August, we barely knew ye, and as the weather turns a little chillier, we get closer to the Halloween season. I'm just as excited as you guys are. Keep your eyes open for bonus content coming in October, as I always do. I try to have an extra episode or two. And, you know, some of them won't get released till November, but that's okay. Something to keep us bone-chattering and creeped out all the way till Christmas is my plan. Guys, thanks so much for taking the time to download this show. And thanks even more to those subscribers out there. We're well past that 1,000 subscriber mark on Podbean. But it doesn't have to be Podbean. You could be on Spotify now. Indeed, our show debuted on Spotify back on the 2nd of August. If you're a Spotify listener, help me build it up on Spotify like I build it up on Podbean. Jump on there, subscribe, put me on your list. I'd really, really appreciate it, and it cost you nothing. Guys, interesting month, August. I talked last month about a new foster child who came to stay with us, and now, well, that foster child is gone. There you go. My job sometimes is a quick turnaround. 2 months, the child was with us, and I can only wish her all the best. Thank you so much to everybody out there for all your support and kind words at this time. It has been an incredibly hard couple of months. I mentioned that my father as well had been diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma a couple months back. And, you know, he's fighting right now. We just took some family pictures the other day and he's got a salt and pepper hat on. So, you know, it's a pretty emotional time for me. I sat back and I really, really, really had to take note of my own voice. A couple days ago, I was going to record, and I was just like, man, like, I just sound so flat. I'm not my happy, energetic, crazy self. I can't do a show. You guys deserve better than that. So there you go. I waited till a little later. This is actually the 1st of September as I record this, and I want to thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for taking the time. You guys know I love this show. There's a lot going on in my life right now. But, you know, and I'm sure there's a lot going on in your life right now as well. I'm sure there's all kinds of things going on. This show, it means the world to me. It might not mean the world to you, but it means the world to me. So my suggestion is to subscribe to the show from wherever you are. And the reason being is because you'll get your monthly reminder as soon as a new episode goes up on most places you do subscribe to. It's very easy to forget about this show because I don't do this three or four times a week like some other shows. And, you know, what can I say? I think it just makes the show more special. Oh, my goodness. I haven't really got a whole lot more to say other than that. Guys, we are very close to the Halloween season. And, you know, as much as I love Halloween, it also means we're close to the Christmas season. I know, it's the final quarter, and I love the final quarter. 2018 has been such an amazing year. And, you know, I just think of some of the accomplishments and crazy stuff that has gone on. And I'm so happy that, well, I got a chance to live out some of my dreams. And, well, another dream is going to be lived out in September. One of my childhood heroes is coming to Newfoundland. Yay, he's coming to Newfoundland. The legendary wrestler Mick Foley, a.k.a. Mankind, a.k.a. Cactus Jack, a.k.a. Dude Love, is coming to St. John's, Newfoundland. And I've never been so proud to say that this show has been brought to you by EWE Entertainment in support of their upcoming event. And today is September 1st. I just heard that this event is sold out. It's on the 20th of September. The meet and greet is from 5 to 7. And the show starts at 7 with Mick. He's going to get up there. He's going to be part of his Hell in a Cell tour. This is 20 years later. He talks about what it's like to be in that match. And, you know, Mick's career was made there. Many people say this was the greatest match of all time. Other people refused to consider it a match because it was so barbaric. And, what can I say? I was a teenage boy at the time. I'm very, very happy and proud to announce that I got VIP tickets. I'm going to meet my hero on September 20th. I'm going to see if I can't get a soundbite from the guy for the podcast. I think it'll be awesome. And, you know, if you guys got tickets out there, I'm so happy to say that I am totally 100% in support of this endeavor. And to the boys who brought this out and made this happen, congrats to you guys. I'm very, very, very proud. Okay, it's now time to dig into this month's paranormal news. And, you know, don't you wish you could just go back in time and fix all the stuff you screwed up? There's no way to live your life, guys. You are who you are because of what you did, what you did. Physicists, though, have developed their model for a real-life TARDIS. Hear that, Steve Lake? Yeah, 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 you, Shannon. I'm talking about the, you know, guys from the Whostorian. Did you know two scientists from Canada and the U.S. have come up with a mathematical model for a viable time machine? Oh, boy. The idea of traveling backwards and forwards through time has captured the imagination of the general public for centuries, especially those of us who have, you know, just horrible histories with men and, oh my God, and women. Like I have a horrible history with women. I'd love to go back and erase at least a couple. But now two physicists believe that they may have found a way to construct a real life time machine, albeit with materials that don't actually exist. Theoretical physicist and mathematician Ben Tippett from the University of British Columbia and astrophysicist David Tsang from the University of Maryland maintain that the key to time travel lies in the using the curvature of space-time to bend time in a circle that can directly be traversed. People think of time travel as something as fiction, and we tend to think of it's possible because we don't actually do it, said Tippett, but mathematically it is quite possible. They call their model traversable, accusable, retrograde domain in space-time, or TARDIS. The same acronym as the blue police telephone box in British science fiction series Doctor Who. My model of a time machine uses the curved space-time to bend time in a circle for the passengers, not in a straight line, said Tippett. That circle takes us back in time. Actually creating a machine that can take advantage of this idea, however, is another matter entirely. While it is mathematically feasible, it is not yet possible to build a space-time machine because we need materials, which we call exotic matter, to bend space-time in these impossible ways, but they have yet to be discovered, said Tippett. And there you go. I'm just basically using this as an excuse to plug the Whostorian. Hey, Steve. Hey, Shannon. Hope you enjoyed that really weird story. Speaking of time jumping in different universes and all this great stuff, physicists have found what could be evidence of a ghost black hole from a universe that existed before our own. The remarkable claim centers around the detection of traces of long-dead black holes in the cosmic microwave background radiation, a remnant of the birth of our universe. According to a group of high-profile theoretical physicists, including Oxford's Roger Penrose, these traces represent evidence of a cyclical universe, one which the universe has no inherent end or beginning, but is formed, expands, dies, then repeats over and over for all eternity. If the university goes on and the black holes gobble up everything, at a certain point, we're only going to have black holes, Penrose told Live Science. Then what's going to happen is that these black holes will gradually shrink. When the black holes finally disintegrate, they will leave behind a universe filled with massless photons and gravitons which do not experience time and space. Some physicists believe that this empty post-black hole universe will resemble the ultra-compressed universe that preceded the Big Bang, thus the entire cycle will begin anew. If the cyclical universe theory is true, it means that the universe may already have existed a potentially infinite number of times and will continue to cycle around and around forever. Who knows, perhaps each of us has also lived countless former existences as well. Very, very zen. Very, very zen. Oh, I love my wife, Stephanie. She's such a special lady. And let me tell you, without her, I wouldn't know what I'd be doing in life. But you know what? It's good to know that if she ever decides to pack up her stuff and leave, or you know, let's face it, kick me out, I could always buy a new holographic wife and move to Japan. Yeah, there I said it. The gate box, or as they like to call it, get the box. Virtual assistant takes the form of a holographic anime girl who can interact with you. Voice assistants such as Amazon Alexa and Apple Siri have become increasingly popular in recent years, but now one Japanese company has taken things one step further by transitioning from a purely voice-based system to one that you can practically have a relationship with. Originally only available to a limited capacity to customers who placed a pre-order, the Get Box virtual assistant appears as a holographic anime girl named Hikara Azuma. In addition to responding to voice commands, Azuma is capable of recognizing her owner's face, controlling various smart devices from around the home, and can even send text messages. According to Get the Box, she has been designed to interact on a more personal level. Ooh. Hikari Azuma is a character with a comforting charm, the film stated. Hikari Azuma will grow to be a user's ideal wife after further updates. Oh, please tell me that she's going to be a cheap date. Currently only available in Japan, the unit can be purchased for 150,000 yen. Oh, God, what's the convert? $1,400? Are you serious? That's, well, from a married perspective, that's nothing. But, you know, if you're in a dating game, that's a lot of money. I don't know, guys. Maybe it's time to get off our phones and smart devices and go look for real, viable women. You know, use Tinder like everybody else. Have you guys seen the viral goat monster? Well, guess what? It's actually a genuine species. A deformed-looking goat-like creature seen in a recent viral video has turned out to be an actual goat breed. With its disproportionately shaped head and strange facial features, it's easy to imagine how this peculiar four-legged beast could be mistaken for something out of a horror movie. As it happens, however, it is in fact a real goat, and this really is its normal appearance. Known as the Damascus goat, this unusual species has been bred for its milk in the Middle East for thousands of years. Incredibly, in 2008, a goat named Quar won the Most Beautiful Goat Prize in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. The original video, which was uploaded onto a Facebook by Ahmed Ramadan, can be viewed, of course, on YouTube. Check it out. This thing is, oh God, like it just looked like a goat got his face chopped. Blah, 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 blah. It is the ugliest thing ever. I hate to say it. And like, I know it's probably beautiful on the inside. And let's be honest, it has just this wonderful gift to give lots of milk. But this thing, you gotta see it. It's like a really bad car accident. You can't stop looking at it. It's really bad. Calamari, anybody? Giant squid has washed up on New Zealand beach. Despite its large size, the giant squid is a species that has long remained highly elusive, a solitary animal that lives deep down in the depths of the ocean where it is rarely encountered. These gigantic sea creatures eke out an existence that scientists know very little about. This huge squid measured 4.2 meters long and was discovered washed up on the Wellington coastline. Very interesting. Brothers Daniel, Jack, and Matthew Eplin have been out for a drive along Wellington's south coast recently when they came across the body of a huge squid sprawled out on the sand. My brother said, "What's that over there?" and pointed it out. said Daniel. It was right next to the track. So we pulled over and we were like, oh my God, it's a big squid. Later, we went back to it and got a tape measure out and found that they measured 4.2 meters long. You can see pictures of this all over the internet, guys. Just look up giant squid washed up on Wellington coastline. And, you know, don't forget your soy sauce and forks, maybe chopsticks if you want to be authentic and enjoy a delicious, gigantic squid meal. God, how do people even eat that? You ever see like the little octopus? It makes me think of like totally off topic. It just reminds me of that octopus thing, that dish. I'm not sure if it was Chinese or Japanese, but it was the octopus. Like they put it on a bed of rice and they put soy sauce in and whatever goes on, there's some kind of chemical reaction and the legs of the octopus dance and then people eat it. Like, my God. Listen, there's no shortage of weird food out there. And well, when you think of the start of a food chain, you gotta think about the humble mosquito. But you know, sometimes things get out of hand and usually it's due to weather. Residents of the Russian city of Taganrog have been inundated with a huge swarm of winged insects this week. A recent released video which shows a local man's hand crawling with hundreds of mosquitoes as thousands more swarm over the head and the road nearby has received more than 170,000 views in just a couple of days. Situated 40 miles from the Ukrainian border, the city has become so infested with the insects that they have formed a slippery... Oh, God, there's something in the closet with me. There's flies in here everywhere, causing cars to skid and fall over. Ha! Gotcha. Known as chromatids, the insect are thought to be breeding in small lakes in the nearby countryside. On the plus side, these particular mosquitoes are actually completely harmless to humans and typically only live for around 5 days before dying off. It might be best to avoid visiting the city until that happens. However, you know, we're talking about millions of these little mosquitoes. And yeah. Guys, I hope you enjoyed this. Jeez. Right on the back of the neck. Did you guys hate that? And then you slap them on the back of the neck and you just feel the splatter and you just gotta instantly take a shower. We had physicists developing their own model for a real life TARDIS. Scientists finding evidence of a former universe. You know, a virtual wife, just in case Steph smartens up and leaves me. The world's most ugliest goat. You gotta see this monster goat. And it really is a genuine species. Another giant squid has washed up in Wellington and swarms of mosquitoes are biting me right now. And you know what? Good. Summer's over. You're all going to be dead soon. All these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
Thanks, John. I would like to welcome you to your MUFON Minute for September 2018. For those heading back to school, or continuing for those who never left like me, I wish you a happy, balanced, and successful year of academic pursuits. As reported on by Roger Marsh, a Missouri witness at Kansas City reported watching 25 orbs crossing the sky with, quote, focused intent, according to testimony in case 88140. The witness and a friend were outside in daylight with clear skies at 3 p.m. on November the 19th, 2017. We were watching a small hawk on the hunt for squirrels and small prey, the witness stated. As we watched him dodge and dart about, I looked up from the hawk, and plain as day and clear as a bell, we saw 25 orbs in a frenzy and all working in the same area. The witness said the objects were kind of clear to blue in color. They initially looked to be big bubbles, and then my friend and I both noticed that these orbs had small wedge-like wings on them, kind of like a bubble with sharp V-shaped wings attached to the center of the orbs. Each orb had two wings, one on each side of the round orb or object. The wings were pointed and sharply joined in the front, and they flared out and progressively became wider at the back of the object. They were 100% not just floating in the wind and being tossed about by the wind currents. While my friend tried to take a picture with his cell phone, I counted each and every one of them within my sight. There were 25 of them. All orbs were totally, busily working in a fixed area straight out in front of us, and absolutely nothing to block our view. They've looked to be focused on working in a small contained area in the sky. Some orbs moved up, some down, some sideways, and all at the same time staying close to one another. The constant movements in all directions, but never straying from their original area that we sighted them in. The witness said it looked like fish feeding on fish food. We watched for about 2 minutes, then this group started to move off to the north of us. We walked about 90 feet as to look again, and they seemed to just fade out as they sped quickly out of our sight. My friend was constantly trying to take pictures with his cell phone, and it is a good one. It would not take pictures of the orbs. My friend's cell phone totally went down and out with no power for about 5 minutes. And within about 5 minutes after the orbs were gone, his phone powered right up and was working fine. I have never seen a UFO of any type in my life, and I have looked many times to see one, and not with result until today. And in my own backyard. I'm an older man now, and too old to waste my time telling big lies on the internet for attention. My friend saw it as well, clear as bell. No chance in the world for it to be anything other than 25 orbs with easily to see wings on them. Missouri MUFON field investigator Lawrence Tyree closed this case as an unknown aerial vehicle. For those following the work of MUFON, a new book has been released, the 2018 edition of UFOs Cases of Interest. The book includes 241 reports for further study, a case overview with field investigator notes. There's also the 2017 statistics section and a four-part index, including location, object, site, and witness. The feature series pulls from cases in the book. Click on the links below if you go on to the www.mufon.com and check under the news section. The book is easily available at amazon.com. The UFO Cases of Interest book includes the best time to see a UFO. Statistically speaking, Iowa is a UFO hotspot. Indiana UFO witnesses observe low-flying crafts. Scary UFO stories. The UFO watch list. A special feature on under 500 feet, so ones that are really close. And Tennessee as a top 6 UFO sighting state. So it's a little American in scope, but still interesting nonetheless. The index allows readers to hunt for specific UFO details of interest, looking up your hometown, your country, your state, your county. But you can also look up the type of witnesses that interest you, so pilots, police, or military. Or you can read about cases where the objects chased the witness, or the witness were afraid. Or even cases where the object was under 500 feet and they got a really close-up look. So really, there's 100 ways to review this book. It's a good tool. The book is also a MUFON fundraiser, which is really great for those of you who are MUFON members and are involved in the work. Remember to keep your eyes to the skies. If you see something interesting, be sure to report it to www.mufon.com. For more information about MUFON in Newfoundland and Labrador, please be sure to check out the Newfoundland UFO Network on Facebook. Thanks so much, John.
Thank God. It's time for oddities.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Boy, that escalated quickly.
I want to believe.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
All right, guys and gals, it's time for Oddities. 10 strange but true facts about a very odd, odd world. And of course, September is such a nice time for people, especially all of us parents, because kids are going back to school. I think about that lovely commercial with the guy gleefully skating through Walmart on the back of a shopping cart with the "It's the most wonderful time of the year" playing in the background. And it got me to thinking, you know, there must be a lot of weird schools out there. And to kind of celebrate this time of year, this fall season, this month before October hits, everyone's back to school. So, well, I thought it'd be kind of cool to talk about the 10 most haunted colleges and universities in America and across the world. The 10 most haunted colleges and campuses. Let's do it. Number one, or I should say number 10, is Gettysburg College in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, which should come as no surprise at all. As everyone knows, Gettysburg College shares its name with an important American Civil War battle, an occasion that set the Union on a path of our triumph, albeit with the death toll for both sides, totaling in the tens of thousands. The Pennsylvania school was born in 1832, over three decades before the battle, and its Pennsylvania Hall centerpiece was turned into a military hospital during the fierce clashes. Inevitably, this was a place of great suffering, and this is said to have been reenacted in spectral form a century later. On an evening in the mid-1960s, two campus employees took the elevator down to the building's first level. However, it refused to stop, carrying them right down into the basement. Expecting to see a nondescript storage area, the personnel were instead greeted by a macabre field hospital scene. Soldiers lay dead or close to death on the floor as blood-sodden doctors struggled to cope amid the chaos. Unusually, perhaps, the whole world-reported scenario played out silently. Ooh, that's a creepy one. Number 9, University of Georgia in Athens, Georgia. Founded at the beginning of the 19th century, the University of Georgia offers an abundance of stories that fit right in with the classic ghost tale. This is according to Assistant Director and Student Programs, Evan Teague, who oversees yearly ghost tours of the Athens campus around Halloween. The unsettling accounts referred to include the tale of Susie Carruthers, who near the end of the 19th century was presented with a rather sizable wedding present, a home that would later become the Alpha Gamma Delta Sorority House. Sadly for Carruthers, though, she was left standing at the altar, or so she thought, for the groom was simply running remarkably late. Even so, stricken with grief, the apparently jilted bride killed herself by hanging in her home's loft, from where her ghost can supposedly be spotted gazing even now. In the Phi Mu Sorority House, meanwhile, students have reportedly used a Ouija board to make contact with the spirit of heartbroken Anna Hamilton, whose fiancé is said to have been murdered by one of his family and buried directly in front of the building. Because, you know, why not build a school there? Or some college dorms. Those crazy college kids, they'll be fine. Number 8, Kenyon College, or, you know, as we all call it, the Big K College in Gambier, Ohio. I love Ohio. Having been established in 1824, oh, God, I'm getting chills already, Kenyon College is Ohio's oldest private high education school. It's perhaps no surprise, therefore, that its Gambier-based grounds have ghost stories aplenty. However, unlike the case with most such campus tales, the spookings going on aren't limited to classrooms and doors. Instead, they begin at the college's south grounds entrance, also known as the Gates of Hell. Legend has it that unfortunates who pass through the gates at midnight, as the nearby Church of the Holy Spirit bells start ringing, risk being sent straight to hell. Other campus ghost stories emerge from real events, notably a 1949 fire that gutted dorm building Old Kenyon, resulting in the tragic deaths of 9 students. Schaefer Dance Studios, meanwhile, is purportedly haunted by what has been nicknamed the Greenhouse Ghost. The spirit is apparently that of a student who it is claimed lost its life there in a freak diving accident when the glass roof builded house of a swimming pool broke. Oh, boy. Number 7, University of Northern Colorado, Greeley, Colorado. According to the University of Northern Colorado's website, there's a ghost story for almost every building. On its Greeley campus, arguably the best-known campus spirit is that of Edith, a dressed former resident advisor who, it is said, hanged herself in the attic of the school's Web King Hall dormitory. Apparently, during her time in the land of the living, Edith had a penchant for marbles, and the students report that she can still be heard playing with them in the building loft. Another legend concerns Florence Sabin, who was among the earliest professional female physicians come research scientist. Moreover, despite the fact that no point was she actually teacher at the university, Sabin Hall was named after the pioneering scientist, and a portion of her was hung in the facility too. Nevertheless, after the painting went missing one day, a number of unexplained and spooky occurrences reportedly began. Witnesses say doors have opened on their own accord, and eerie rattling and creaking sounds have been perceived in the building. Get me out of here. Literature and film students at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign should take note. The school's English building is said to harbor a ghost of a drowned young woman during the structure's time as a woman's dorm in 1905-37. An unfortunate student allegedly went to her watery grave in the swimming pool that was there, and which has been converted into an atrium. Interesting. Another version of the story has it that the student was murdered. Regardless of how she met her death, though, her spirit has since reportedly been seen staring from a third floor window and aimlessly walking the halls. You know, just walking around. Next door to the English building on the university's Urbana campus is Lincoln Hall, where an occasion of mysterious face can apparently be observed in one of the top windows. Such spooky tales have captured the imagination of folklore professor Susan Gray Davis, who has said, regarding the campus and its stories, these really are scary things that happen here. Yeah, you think? You think? Really? Number 5, Wells College in good old Aurora, New York. Aurora's Wells College takes its ghostly history very seriously, so much so, in fact, that in the early 1990s, some of the most enduring tales of the supernatural were recorded and added to New York School's archives. One of these concerns Max, a security guard who lost his life while evacuating students during a fire that destroyed the previous incarnation of Wells Morgan Hall. Today, students still occasionally feel the guard's insistent pushes when walking down the building's stairs. Another story centers on the main building's red door, behind which lay the student victims of a dreadful winter flu outbreak. The door was painted its warning color to prevent people from unwittingly entering the provisional morgue it led to, but after the bodies were either buried or cremated, the door repainted the red seep through, perhaps to signify this space's macabre former use. Today, as the building has since been refurbished, nobody knows for sure which room had the infamous red door. Ugh, man, oh man, I bet you can't wait to get your school supplies now, especially if you're headed to East Tennessee State University in Johnson City, Tennessee. Boy, I wouldn't want to go to this school. One of the many qualities of which East Tennessee State University founding president Sidney Gilbert could be praised is his dedication to duty. Gilbert passed away in 1961, but his ghost apparently still resides in the Johnson City Institution's Gilbert Hall. Not to scare students, but to switch off lights that have been left on and close windows left open. Another less practically minded spirit is said to dwell in the sorority house, Lucille Clement Hall. Residents know the ghost dubbed Marble Boy, who has come to say hello when they hear the sound of marbles rolling around the upper level. Once they go upstairs, though, there's no one to be seen. In Burleson Hall, meanwhile, the spirit of former English student teacher Christine Burleson, who died in 67, reportedly occupies a picture of David Sinclair Burleson, her dad. Students say that this, or her, eyes track people as they walk past, and this is actually where the cliche picture with the eyes shift back and forth you see in cartoons and different movies and stuff like that actually came from. I thought that was really, really interesting. So you know what? Tennessee, Johnson City, you guys are awesome and very, very creepy. I am yet to look at pictures and paintings of women and men and not be kind of like creeped out looking for those eyes to move. Number 3, Holland University in Virginia. According to Holland University's 2012 guidebook, a number of urban legends center on the school's Roanoke campus, the majority of them concerning ghosts. Indeed, the publication states that almost every building, more than a century old, is said to harbor a past student spirit. For while the Virginia Institution assumed its full university identity in 98, its roots as coeducational college stretch back to 1842. Today's campus features many historic buildings like Presser Hall, completed in 1925, and home to music department. It was here, so the story goes, that a female student began a relationship with her piano teacher, who later murdered her during practice. It's pretty creepy. What's more, apparently her ghost still haunts the building as a dark figure visible in a window in the school's main building. Meanwhile, is the green drawing room where it is held that a student shot herself, and that spirit continues to reside there. I mean, why would your piano teacher kill you? Like, you know, you're not playing good enough? Murder, murder, murder. Oh my God. Musicians are the worst. I'm joking. I am one. Number 2 is Pennsylvania State University, Penn State. Well, I mean, we all know what TV show this is going to end up being. Pennsylvania State University's old botany building may look charming, but it has a sinister legend attached to the cottage, which dates back to 1909. It's said to harbor the ghost of Frances Ahern, the widow of former University George R.W. Ahern. Following his death in 1906, Ahern was buried just to the side of the Schwab Auditorium, which itself is directly opposite Old Botany. This allowed the grieving widow to watch over her late husband's grave from the red brick residence, and legend has it that the spirit still does so from an upstairs window. Numerous ghostly sightings has also been recorded at the auditorium itself. Rachel Moser, president of the University State Park campus-based Paranormal Research Society, has said that the inside the building, which was completed in 1903, there seems to be the ghost of a janitor, and we think that it is a female spirit in the theater. Others, meanwhile, believe that the athlete himself haunts the auditorium, but whatever the real identity of the spectral presence, students have nicknamed the venue, Schwaboo. And, of course, everybody here knows University Park campus-based Paranormal Research Society. Yeah, they're the guys behind Paranormal State. So there you go. Make sure, make no wonder they got their own TV show. Look at where they went to school to. And the number one haunted place, Ohio University in Athens, Ohio. Oh, boy. Ohio University's Athens main campus is said to have had the lion's share of spooky goings-on, most notably in Wilson Hall's infamous Room 428, where in the 1970s, a female occupant started behaving oddly. The student began intoning in a strange tongue, alarming her friends, but before they could intercede, the girl had plummeted to her death from a window. At the time, she was reportedly practicing astral projection, the supposedly departure of the astral form from the physical body. The room was, moreover, since has been shut, amid reports of an eerie phenomena like unexplained voices and flying objects everywhere on campus is what's left to the bridges, a development that formerly accommodated a local psychiatric hospital, the almost 90-year-old Ridges Building 26, the hospital's old tuberculosis ward, was reputed to be haunted, which may have influenced the university's decision to raise it in 2013, despite protests from local conservationists. Guys, there you have it, the 10 most haunted places in the world, which just so all happen to be in America, that are schools or colleges or dorms. Oh my goodness gracious, that's just creepy. All of those oddities, I really hope you enjoyed them. We'll be back with our guest very, very soon. Don't you dare go away.
Thanks, John, and greetings from Betty, your oracle, with 5 minutes of wisdom for your consideration and enjoyment. Today's topic is part one of a two-part series about souls. The question for today, does everyone have a soul? Well, yes, everyone definitely has a soul. Else we'd all be part of that television program, The Walking Dead. We're not The Walking Dead. We are actually souls having a human experience. Some would say that our soul is contained in our body. Others would say our soul contains our body. It is not in our body, we are contained within our soul. Either way, we each, every single person, every animal, some would even say trees, plants, flowers, most would say everything, every living being has a soul. The soul began as a being of light that came from sound. This I only learned very, very recently. Sound before light. So we were sound before we became light. The soul is a light being. We are light beings. Some are a little darker and a little dimmer than others. And those that can all be repaired, fixed, whatever we decide to do. However, getting back to the topic of our beautiful soul. So when you sleep at night, who watches you sleep? Just think about that for a second. So you go to sleep, your ego shuts down for the night. and decides it needs rest, because all our physical bodies do need rest on this very heavy, dense, third dimensional planet. We need rest. Our bodies need rest. However, when we're resting, we're dreaming, are we not? There are things going through our mind. Who's watching that? Who is the watcher? Who's the person that, who's the entity that gives you the information that you've been dreaming? It's your soul. What gets hurt the most when people throw nasty words at you? It's your soul that feels that. Your soul, as far as I'm concerned, your heart is the biggest, biggest part of your whole entire soul. It's the holding place of your soul, or your soul is the holding place of your heart, where all the love comes from. The soul does get hurt, like I said, and gets darkened and diminished. And there are things we can do about that. I have all kinds of information on my YouTube channel, on my eFactor page about souls. I do a lot of work with souls. Our souls are so beautiful. Our souls can sing the song of joy, or our souls can be a broken heart that has just lost a loved one. There's another area of what happens when we pass, what happens to our soul. Those are things we're going to discuss next month. This month has been all about, do we have a soul? Yes, yes, yes. We each have souls. Don't let anybody tell you any different. So for more information, please check out my eFactor page, Betty Collins eFactor. You can private message me as well on my personal page, Betty Collins page. You can as well email me at Betty Scott Collins, BETTYSCOTTCOLLINS NLP@gmail.com for more information. So, next month's topic, do all souls originate on Earth? Be listening next month. It's going to be interesting. Back to you, John.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
Welcome back to the Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast. And you know what? I gotta admit, I have a huge ego. My ego's massive. And I wasn't happy until I got to hear, you know, and actually see in my stats that I'm listened to all across North America. And how can I not be if I don't get someone from like the freaking Yukon somewhere in Alaska to be on my show? Well, do I got a doozy of a guest for you, man. Oh man, since it's Halloween time, everyone's thinking about demons and devils and all kinds of evil shenanigans, and maybe even a few familiars too. Tonight I am blessed to have a wonderful guest on my show. She is the author, okay, of Demons and Familiars, a contemporary guide of demonology. She is the last frontier medium. She's Melinda K. Leon. Melinda, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I'm so glad you took the time to be on my show. I'm officially heard all across the states now. How is it up there? Is it cold?
No, actually, it's bright and sunny, and it's very warm. It's very nice right now. I'm enjoying it as long as I can before it does snow.
I'm telling you, this global warming thing is awesome. It's worked wonders for Newfoundland. You know, it's not half as cold here as it usually is. We just had the hottest summer on record. And speaking of hot, when I think of demons and devils and all these wonderful things, I just want to jump right on in and talk to you right away about this wonderful book that you've published, just in time for the Halloween season, of course. Tell me a little tiny bit about the inspiration behind your book, Demons and Familiars.
Well, the inspiration really happened kind of by accident. When I was first starting out with my career as a psychic medium, I started finding that people that were coming to me were having paranormal issues. And a lot of the psychics that they would go to would give them the worst advice. And it came to the point where it was actually making their problems worse. And over time, over my career, I developed my own strategic ideas and tools, and I was able to uncover a lot of myths that a lot of people thought were truths based on the paranormal and based on demons and familiar entities. And it came to the point where, you know, boom, it just started manifesting, and I started creating this book, and it really does help a lot of people.
I'm so glad that there's somebody out there who's willing to help, because, well, it's awfully hard for a lot of people to come forward about their experiences. The last thing people want is to think you're a nut job, and when you tell them you might have a haunted ghoul or ghost in your house, the last thing you want to do is tell people about it. But you have gone ahead and helped these people and given them a way to contact and get information. This wonderful book, Demons and Familiars, I'll pump it one more time. In this book, you talk about earthbound spirits, poltergeists, curses, infestation, oppression. I mean, we could go on forever. So why don't we just go down through the list here and talk a little bit about your opinion of what earthbound spirits are and some of your experiences.
Well, earthbound spirits, or commonly known as earthbound souls, they are basically human souls that refuse to leave the earth realm. And they can stay for as long as they desire. There are some that can stay from thousands of years ago to just yesterday when they passed on, and they refuse to cross over. And the myth that a lot of people don't understand, or usually just misunderstand or misinterpret, is that just because you see an earthbound spirit that they're immediately evil. Sometimes they're not, but they do tend to be lost souls or lower vibrational souls, which usually tend to be stuck being attached to the earth materialization of that kind of lifestyle, such as drugs, alcohol, sex, or even other things like material objects like cars and purses and dolls, such, you know, those kinds of things. And earthbound souls can be very attracted to people that are materialistic, that are attracted to those other kinds of things, even such as addiction as cigarettes. Something as simple as that can actually draw earthbound spirits, especially bars, hotels, you know, many other kinds of locations, even museums with old artifacts that they probably either found themselves or that they've been attached to themselves. It just depends, but all earthbound spirits have their own story, and they all have their own reason for why they stay. And the hardest part for a lot of people is to accept sometimes if their own loved ones have been earthbound. And that's the hardest part with a client, but there's always hope to help that soul to cross over. They're never forced to stay on earth. But once they do cross over, they're able to come back anytime they wish. They don't have to stay here.
Very, very interesting. You know what? That's the first time I've ever heard about spirits being attracted to cigarette smoke and stuff like that. I'm like, I'm so glad I quit smoking a couple of years ago. And come to think of it, I quit the ghost hunting thing not too long ago too. Oh my God. Hope they're not mad at me over there. I haven't talked to them in a while. Last thing I want is another one of those poltergeists showing up. Tell me a little tiny bit about maybe some of the things you've experienced yourself, Melinda. Have you ever been in contact, so we'll say, with, say, a poltergeist or an earthbound spirit or anything like that before?
Oh, my. Every day. It's all the time. Because of my career, because of what I do, every place that I go, I'm basically like a magnet. And because we're all energy and we're all made of the same consciousness, energy, and creation and light, we can attract many kinds of entities. But those that are more awakened, such as myself, or people that also do the same likeness of work, for me, though, you know, you tend to attract things you don't want to attract, you don't want to bring home. It's kind of like you go to one of the most common things is I'll go to a hotel, where I'm traveling to go visit somewhere. And then I'll find myself having my bed shake really hard, or I'd wake up and there's a spirit trying to scratch me, pull me out of bed, or take my covers off, or even try to be intimate with me. And it happens a lot. It's actually very common, and that would be just an earthbound spirit. And but even demons are actually a lot worse. Familiar entities are a lot worse. So it depends on where you go. But, you know, it's kind of hard, I admit, to tell you at the top of my head what is the one kind of memory that stands out the most. There's been so many countless experiences that it's truly hard to decipher or decide which one I could even share. But I have had many earthbound souls always come to my house, especially if I go to a location such as a restaurant or a bar or even a store, and then they'll follow me home. And the other possibility that usually happens too is if I'm helping a client, which is almost actually really a guarantee, and when I'm helping that client, that entity that is attached to them will then become attached to me and start haunting me. But at the same time, it's like a blessing, but it's a curse and a blessing, because then I get to really know exactly 100% what that person's going through, to really describe to them what they've been going through. And then that way I can help them as best as possible. And that's always the end goal.
You know, I've had other people on my podcast before, you know, that Cindy Sauer, just thinking of her story. I mean, she's been on TV many times with her stories. And, you know, I think about everyone who's involved when it comes to demonic possessions and things like that. Can you tell me, this is probably a no-brainer for you, but what exactly is the difference between like an oppression and a possession? What exactly is the difference there?
Oh, it's a huge difference. Oppression, well, in the demonic stages, what's commonly been widespread told, there is infestation, which is how the entity is manifested or invited into your life in some way or form. And then there's oppression, which is what you're just asking, which is where, and then there's possession. But there's actually infestation, oppression, influence, and possession. And influence is a step that I actually do describe in my book. But that is more based on how the possession actually starts. So oppression is where, right after the entity in the infestation period enters your home and enters your space and enters your consciousness, your wave of communication, that's when in the oppression stage, the entity starts to separate you from the crowd. They start to only haunt that one specific person, or possibly two. And it's very rarely if it's an entire family. It just depends. It can happen, but the entity will have one specific person in mind that they specifically want to target because of their natural connection and natural abilities. And that can be a huge risk, especially if someone is unaware, such as even a child or even a teenager or an adult. And in the oppression stage, the oppressive stage happens where, you know, paranormal activity starts to occur. They start to feel alone. They start to feel isolated. They start to feel like no one will understand them. They start to feel drained. They have a fear of sleeping. They don't want to be in their home. They start to feel the intense amount of energy of feeling like something is there and there's nothing they can do to run away from it. And the impression stage is really crucial during the demonic haunting stages, because without that stage, the entity cannot partake in the influence in the possession stage. This is where it breaks down the human's free will, the human's ability, the victim's ability to fight back. And it really breaks down their strength, their courage, and their faith, and even their hope in finding any way out of it. And then when it gets to the influence stage, which is a stage that not very many people that I just started introducing in my book, that I do feel a lot of demonologists and psychic mediums miss, but respectfully so, it's understandable. But what I discovered during all my work was that the influence stage was also there, but it was so slight that people were mistaking it for possession. Influence stage is where, and I know you didn't ask, but I feel like I need to tell you this just so I can then answer the next question, which is the possession. But in the influence stage, right after the oppression, right after they feel alone, that's when they start to feel as if they're vulnerable, they're completely open. And in the influence stage, that's when the entity starts to impact the person, the victim, the target, by doing things that this person wouldn't normally do. But this isn't possession. This is the step right before possession. And this is where the entity gets to play around with their thoughts, with their emotions. And you'll hear a lot of people say, oh, I just freaked out over this and that's not my character. Oh, I just said this and that's not my character. Oh, I just found myself acting this way or doing this and that's not my character. But a lot of people mistaken this as possession. But it's not. It's actually influence, because they still had the ability to deny the choice to do it. But they were so forced, as in influence, almost like peer pressure. They are influenced into doing it. They don't want to, but they feel like they have to. And this is not possession, but this is where the entity can test the victim to see if they're really a potential candidate of being in possession. And if they are soundly so, and the influence is a success, after a few weeks to a few months, sometimes even a few days, and very rarely a few days, but it takes quite a time, quite a while. Then that's when they'll jump into the possession state. And the possession state is when the entity fully impacts the person, usually in sleep state. And that's where the person will find themselves sleepwalking, and they don't normally sleepwalk. They'll start experiencing sleep paralysis, where the entity is paralyzed and the person is starting to try to take over the human victim. Possession is where the difference is. In oppression, the person's feeling isolated and their free will is being broken down. And right when that stage is completed, the influence state is where they influence the person to do things that they wouldn't normally do, to see how strong their free will really is. It's a test. And then once that test is succeeded, that they feel it, that it's a success, then they will start to partake in the possession state. And possession can take months to really determine if it's true or not, whether or not it's actually accurate, whether or not it's authentic. And a lot of times possession is very hard to determine, but there's many different ways.
Awesome. I'm so glad that there's somebody like you out there who knows their stuff. Man, oh man, there's so much information, a lot of it. And, you know, I got to ask, because it's right there on your webpage, one of the other things I noticed that you mentioned was an astral realm attack. And of course, whenever I think of astral realm or astral projection, I think of my good friend Garnett Schulhauser. And I know that what he delves into sometimes isn't what he wants to see. You know, tell me a little tiny bit about astral realm attacks. I believe this would have to do with astral projection, correct?
Yes. Astral realm attacks are when the entity starts to attack the person in sleep state. And a lot of the times, astral projection, a lot of people will mistaken this sometimes as just a really bad dream. But in astral projection, it's when the entity is then pulling the soul, their astral body. And you'll see this in many yoga instructions and booklets and websites. I think even Buddhism is very popular in this, and Hinduism. But Buddhism, that's a new one. But when it comes down to the astral attacks, the astral realm, it's a whole other realm right after the earth realm. It's actually the realm we all go to right after we die. So that way it's so familiar for us, but we're still getting used to our soulful transition. And so we can slowly progress to the higher realms outside of earth and more into the spirituality of the energetic fields. And that's when the entity will pull the person's soul, their astral body, to say, out of their physical body and start to attack them. And usually it will seem like a really bad dream, because it will feel so real and so lucid, as if you can't escape it. And usually most often it will be where the person will find themselves still in their bedroom right after they fall asleep. It'll be almost instantaneously. And then that dream, that astral attack experience, they'll find themselves either right when they sleep, that they wake up and something woke them up, shaking their soul out of their body, and then they find themselves being attacked, such as scratch marks, sexual assault, which is very common with sexual demons, especially with people that have experienced these kinds of traumas already in their past. Because the whole target with the entity is to attack them at their most vulnerability, what they're most deathly afraid of, because they feed on your fear. an astral attack is one of the most common and most powerful ways to attack somebody, because then they can also attack your psychic abilities. And usually right after these kinds of attacks, you'll wake up with bruises, excessively drained to the point where you could have 8-9 hours of sleep and feel like you only got 5 minutes. You could find yourself with scratch marks. You could even find yourself with your blankets completely off your bed, such as you went to sleep. And then in the astral experience, the entity pulls your leg, pulls the blankets. It seems real, maybe even jabs you in your leg. Then you wake up suddenly after a great amount of struggle, and then you find that it's exactly how they left you physically. It's actually really quite startling when I say it out loud, but it is definitely one of those things that a lot of people are so deathly afraid to talk about because they're afraid, oh my gosh, am I crazy? And you hit the nail on the head when it came to that part, because that is one of the biggest reasons why I did write this book, was because I went through a lot of these experiences myself and I had no one to turn to. There was nobody I could go to really help. And when I realized that this was something that was more common than I realized, that's what really inspired me to write this book, was to help so many other people, even with something as minimal as astral attacks. But they do happen. They're very real.
And I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but I've had a reoccurring dream. It's happened twice, and I don't dream ever. Like, I'm a black voice. When I wake up, I remember nothing for the most part. And one thing I will say is I've had this dream before where I wake up, and it almost seems like there was something attached to my head. Hear my cat? That's my little cat, though, and if anybody wants to know. But anyway, I would wake up from this dream, and, it was almost like this thing was attached to my head, and as soon as I woke up, it pulled away from me and went up into the sky. Can you give me any clarification on what that might actually be? Because you'd be the third person I've asked about it now.
That is actually very common. That's not unusual. It's interesting you say this because, and I can't validate this, obviously, because you already mentioned it before I did, but something similar happened to me about 2 days ago where I was sleeping and I kept feeling like something was latched to my skull at the back of my head very hard. And it almost felt like it wasn't aggressive, but I felt something similar. And that's not unusual right before I meet somebody. But I believe what's going on, because it isn't a formal reading, but what I do feel is that this is definitely an entity that is attached to you in some form. And it will, because one of the reasons why a lot of entities will attack certain people, you don't even have to be a psychic or a medium to be prone to attacks. Just being interested in the paranormal at all, just having that open mind already invites the possibility of attacks. And so what I'm feeling, what I'm sensing, is this is definitely an entity that is attached to you in some case, but I'm not sensing that it's incredibly powerful. I think it's more of one of those things where it seems more like, I don't want to say a familiar. Like I said, I'm not doing a formal reading right now, but what I do sense is that it is around you. But if that's all you're experiencing and nothing else, then it's not a real threat. All you have to do is a few simple things and it would be gone. You wouldn't have to worry about it.
I just thought it was really interesting that it was as soon as I woke up, and it was the exact same thing twice, and very, very odd. As it pulled away, it was almost like I was connected to it, and then in my waking, as soon as my eyes opened, it just kind of disappeared. You know what I mean? Very, very strange. Well, I'm glad I'm not in any danger. Lord only knows I've been to quite a few haunted houses in my day. Tell me a little tiny bit more about familiars. We talked about demons. What's really the difference here?
I knew you were going to bring that up. Familiars are quite unique. A lot of people usually assume that familiars are just entities that look like animals or insects, but it's so much more than that. It's so much more broader than that. Familiar entities are a whole different category besides demons, devils, or poltergeist, or a earthbound soul. They're completely different. Even from an angel, they're not anywhere near the same. Familiar entities are a whole creation of their own at the same time. And granted, even demons are their own creation. There's never one of the same demon. They're all different. They're all unique. But familiar entities are usually created from witchcraft. They're usually created from human living people, from passion, from desires with hate. They're usually created through other curses or spells that are casted out of anger or hate or revenge. And a lot of the times these entities can be almost just as powerful, if not more, as a demon. It just depends on the entity. Sometimes they are almost nearly harmless. They're just around and then you got to get rid of them, kind of like a mouse. Like, you know, it's in your house and you got to get it out. You got to get the mouse out of your house. But at the same time, there's going to be some familiar entities that are so unique. There was actually one in particular, and this is a story I will share, is I will never forget it. It was actually here in Alaska, and I was helping this one client named Amanda, and she had found me through Facebook and through my YouTube channel. And she had been dealing with a familiar entity, and this was actually my first encounter with one. And I will never forget it. It was actually on the astral realm, and it was very interesting. I don't know if you know much about Pokemon.
I have a 7-year-old and soon to be 8-year-old tomorrow, actually, daughter. And let me just say, I'm 100% proud to say that I've gone and played Pokemon Go with my little girl before. So there you go. I'm well versed in the Pokedex. I know what you're talking about.
Well, congrats to that. I'm happy for you. But when it comes to the, I bring it up because it sounds silly when I say it out loud, but what happened was on the astral realm, when I told Amanda I was going to help her, and I was actually planning on going out to her, and she lived out in about an hour away from me. And we were already planning it, and I was going to go see her and actually do my very first walkthrough in someone else's home professionally. And so, and I don't charge for these. I always do these kinds of things, these paranormal advisory sessions for free. I never charge, even if I go to their home. And because they can't help it, you know, that's like if a cop, you know, you have problems with a burglar. Cop ain't going to say, well, are you going to pay me or not? That's not what you should do it, you know? But, so I go to her house, but before I did, before the walkthrough, something interesting happened literally the day before I went to her house. And I told her, I do feel an entity around me, but I'm not entirely sure, but I'll let you know. She said, okay. I go to sleep that night before we go. And I kid you not, I found myself immediately the second I closed my eyes, I woke up really hard because I went into this deep trance, because I am also a trance medium. And right when I went to that state, I immediately saw through my third eye, and I saw the entity manifest by coming out of these shadows in my bedroom. And I was asleep, but I could see out of my third eye on the astral realm. And I saw this big ball, big, huge, and it looked like the Pokemon Ghastly, kid you not. It looked just like that entity. I believe it was Ghastly. Very old Pokemon.
Just for all the Pokemon fans out there, that is Gen 1. it's basically this black ball with eyes and a mouth, and it just has purple glowy stuff around it. That's Ghastly.
And it really creeped me out because I've never seen it before, and all I kept thinking about was, why does that look familiar? But when it flew around me, I heard it say in telepathy in my head, it said, now you see me. And then as it flew next to me, it was gigantic. The eyes were so intense. The smile was sharp teeth. It was honestly quite alarming because I didn't expect this. And then it just suddenly went up close to me, and then it moved away, and then it disappeared, and I immediately woke up. And I went, oh my gosh, did I just see that? And I thought, why does that look like a Pokemon I've seen when I was a kid? So there's sometimes they're really scary and they look like something you would picture as a demon entity. But sometimes they are created in their own way. And this entity was actually manifested and created by one of my client's family members who apparently practices witchcraft. And this person had put a curse on her, and I had discovered this as I did more of the walkthrough. So familiar entities are, you know, they can do just as much damage. They can cause illness. They can cause, you know, permanent damage to your health. They can cause mental disabilities. They can cause all sorts of things. A lot of bad luck. They can do many, many things. They're just as powerful. And the threat of them is just as vital.
Well, there you have it. Now, I understand that you've got a, well, popular YouTube channel, correct?
Yeah. Tell me. I don't know if it's popular.
Well, we're going to do a little something about that because I'd like for all my many, many listeners who listen to my show to go check out your YouTube page. Tell me a little tiny bit about your YouTube page. What's the address? How do we get there? Yada, yada.
It's pretty simple because I go by Last Frontier Medium. You just type in Last Frontier Medium and poof, I'll just show up right there throughout the whole search engine. That's my channel name. And, I mean, it's a pretty modest channel. It's not grand. It's not huge, but, I have a lot of client experiences recorded there where I helped a lot of people, and I'm uploading every week, and I'm always coming up with new ideas. And more importantly, Spirit is always having more impressions and desires for me to publish more information for many people.
One thing that attracted to me just right away about your YouTube channel is that you do something I think that's very, very interesting. You don't charge. You actually don't charge. And I'm just going to read the thing that's on your webpage right now. Here it comes. For those that have been avid viewers of my YouTube channel know that I do many readings for free, including paranormal advisory. I've been asked by many of you to put up a donation button so you can give back a small gift in return for my help. I've been stubborn doing this, for I'm not one asking for handouts, but because of you asking for several months, I finally made a donation option. So there you go. I think that's a beautiful, beautiful thing, because there's many people out there who could use your help who might not be able to afford it. And, you know, I think that's just, it speaks volumes of your character as a medium.
I mean, I appreciate that. I mean, I do charge, but but when it comes to the specifics of, I mean, I give away free readings every month. Sometimes I give away 3 to 4, sometimes even 5, because I do believe that it is something you should give out of the goodness of your heart. But, yes, for paranormal advisory, it is always free. Absolutely. I never charge ever.
That is always awesome. Free. I think that's really, really wonderful. Of course, you know, there's always a little bit of light to brighten up the dark, and you are a light worker as well. And, you know, we haven't got a whole lot of time to talk about it, but, you know, light worker, empath, psychic medium, astral realm experiences, meditation, healing remedies. There's all kinds of wonderful things. I got to leave this on a positive note because I do have a positive paranormal podcast. And The Last Frontier Medium, guys, you can check her out in many, many places on YouTube and whatnot. But, you know, her website, www.lastfrontiermedium.com, is wonderful. Last Frontier Medium, she's a psychic medium, an author, a spiritual advisor, and, well, the newest friend to be on the Odd of the Newfoundland Paranormal podcast. Melinda, thank you so much for being on my show tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, @ODDTONFLD. That's Odd to Newfoundland. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.